How are you? Welcome to the Entrepreneur Experiment Podcast with me, Gary Fox. Today, my guest is Conal Laverty from Wya. This is going to teach you how to bootstrap a really successful business by solving real problems for real people. Here's my chat with Conal.
Conal, welcome to the pod.
Hey, Gary. Good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Take two.
Yeah, let's do that again.
Welcome. Good to chat to you.
Yeah, thank you, Gary. Good to be here. I'm looking forward to our discussion today.
Yes. Give me your one sentence overview of what you're doing.
Yeah. So really at Wya, we help large energy consumption companies to get an understanding of their electricity, gas and water to achieve sustainability goals. So as we're all very aware, energy is really probably the biggest thing in the world for a lot of people. And we're now at a stage where the world has to solve a lot of the problems that we have. And that starts with being able to capture the data and understand it.
Chunky.
Yeah. Very chunky.
Chunky.
Yeah. Yeah. Energy isn't going away.
Way to bring the mood down there straight away.
But we can bring some positive energy to this as well, for sure. I'm very much an optimist when it comes to this, right? So when we look at where we're at with energy production itself, we're still basically cavemen, really. If you look at the three types of civilization that can be expected, we're not even a type one civilization, which is one that can harness the energy of their own planet. We're very, very, very far away from that. Never mind the star or the galaxy or anything that we may be able to do further down the line. And that's really where my optimism comes from. We're just still at the very early days. And while we have these problems, we can work on solutions.
Okay. Yeah. I'm processing a lot there.
I'm
trying to catch up to speed with you. Where did this idea come from? Because that's a big, meaty problem to get your teeth into.
Yeah, for sure. So my background starting with, I guess, the background of Wya is we moved into the IoT industry initially because my bike was stolen from two floors underground.
IoT is what?
The Internet of Things. Now, it means a lot of things to different people. Mm. It's actually, even though we're in the industry, it's a phrase I try to avoid as much as possible because I think it's lost a lot of nuance.
I think it does, yeah.
But for me, it's really about creating a constellation of sensors that you can use to monitor the environment and create insights, essentially.
Yeah, it's been great summaries for you, the best summaries I've heard. You said your bike got nicked, and that was the kind
It was one of 12 that got nicked that week. So being the engineer that I am, and I guess somewhat slightly obsessive, I decided to try to build a device that could track bikes by utilizing the smartphone network around them. Not too dissimilar, actually, from the technology that was used for the COVID app over the pandemic. Only this was about 7-8 years ago. And it was utilizing the network of smartphones so you could put little devices onto bikes and then track where they are.
And what would they do? They'd ping a nearby smartphone, AirTag kind of idea or what?
Exactly like AirTag, actually. Okay. Yeah. So AirTag many, many years ago. So very, very similar technology. And what I noticed from starting to work in that industry is that the software infrastructure for me, and it was an even bigger problem. So people trying to build IoT devices, you were spending months and months, and companies were spending millions of euros, dollars, whatever the currency, trying to build this infrastructure that's required to capture the data, to manage the fleet, to do analytics, all of the different things that are required. So we decided to build that and give it to developers to help them to push their initiatives. Skipping forward then, we then started to work in the smart building industry, primarily around occupancy.
And so you were kind of testing ideas, were you?
For sure. We even went to the education market for a while and had our own kind of almost like the Lego of electronics for helping to build these IoT devices physically.
Yeah.
And what we noticed as we progressed through these different, for to save to not use the term, but anyway, pivot.
It's so hard not to. Yeah. I always try to avoid using startup bro cliche terms, but sometimes you're like, there's no other word. I'm going to have to say the P word.
Yeah, exactly. I forgive myself because I just go back to my basketball days and just go, that's the original place that came
before
from
it was
me.
Lame. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It was so cool in those days, 20 years ago or whatever that was.
I don't think Irish people playing basketball was ever cool.
Yeah, like, and certainly, like, yeah, I'm not exactly, you know, 8 foot, but yeah, it somehow was a sport that I fell into for a good few years, and had a stint playing for Ulster for a few years, and all of those different things.
Tyrone, a notorious basketball hotspot.
Oh yeah. You know, Steph Curry comes over to visit Tyrone all the time just to see what basketball talent that is coming up these days. You know, that's where the magic's happening for the Warriors for sure. And yeah, so we then kind of were working with enterprise customers, and the energy issues were really starting to hit home because their customers were expecting them to be more sustainable. They were trying to reduce their operational spend. Even things like mortgages were starting to cost more because they didn't have the technology in that actually they were able to use to provide real-time insights of the energy performance of their buildings.
Okay.
And this is an extremely large number of sites throughout the world. And then we moved into it and started noticing there were a lot of issues in that industry. So energy monitoring has been around for quite a few years, but it's not run well. And that's why we decided we could do it better. And so we introduced kind of new methods that helped it to work, helped us to kind of grab lots of customers very quickly. And that's so far working out great for us.
And what was, in simple terms, what was the kind of the original version of the idea you're working on now? What were you, when you were kind of getting this feedback, you're like, oh, we'll develop this to solve that.
Over the past 5 years in this podcast, I've spoken to loads of amazing Irish business who grew from one idea, become world-class companies, able to compete with the very best on the international stage. And many of those started up and grew with the help of their local enterprise office. From starting or growing to becoming more sustainable or digitization, the local enterprise offices have everything to help make it happen for your business. And if there's one thing that entrepreneurs want, aside from more money, it's more time. The local enterprise offices want to give that back. Their supports for competitiveness and productivity can help your business save time, money, and energy. For them, it's all in a day's work. So if you want to give your business the gift of time, decreased costs, and lower electricity bills, then go to allinadayswork.ie, take 2 minutes to fill out the form, and let your local enterprise office handle the rest. If you've been listening for a while, you know Iconic Offices have been my partner for ages now. Working and recording out of their flexible workspaces has meant a huge deal to the success of this podcast. So it made perfect sense to partner up with them again for season 17, but to give you, my fellow entrepreneurs, a unique offer. Come work in the Iconic Office workspaces for free with no catches. Simply visit the link in the description below and enter Gary24 for a free day pass or a free day office pass. Enjoy. So in a couple of weeks on May 21st, I'm hosting the Retail Excellence Ireland Retail Retreat in Dublin. It's Ireland's largest retail conference with speakers such as Michael Corcoran, old friend of mine and ex-head of social at Ryanair, and a special guest I can't reveal, but here's a clue. He recently led Ireland to big success in the rugby field, and he's an expert in managing winning cultures. You can figure that one out. Visit retailexcellence.ie to grab a ticket, and I'll see you there.
Yeah, so with energy monitoring specifically, a lot of the existing companies, what they'll do is they will have an analyst. That analyst will go on site. They will monitor all of the equipment. They will then do a survey. They will then go back to their office. They'll write up a report. They'll then do a quote. And then there'll be a large capital expenditure to get the equipment in to start to capture the data. And a lot of these companies don't have their own software platforms. They don't have any of their own technology. Some don't have any in-house engineering capabilities beyond being able to do the survey piece. So what we did differently was we said, okay, well, we don't have to be there to do any of this stuff. Just send us a bunch of photos and videos. And we check that ourselves. So we're sitting monitoring locations all around the world. We now monitor about 40 countries in the world. And we're able to do that from kind of our own home offices.
Yeah.
And then we're able to figure out the equipment that goes into each of these buildings, send it in a box, they install it themselves, and it is an extremely scalable model in comparison to the incumbent way of doing things.
So you look at how they're doing it now, you get the videos and the images, and you kind of go, okay, that's a type, whatever, we can now install this there.
Exactly. So we will see, okay, this type of meter from this manufacturer. It has these interfaces on it. So to compare it to a computer, you know, a computer has USB and HDMI.
Yeah.
These have similar interfaces that you can connect sensors to. And then that is used to capture, say, the kilowatt consumption, if it's electricity, and we then transmit that over our own networks to our servers and then start to generate real-time insights.
So that's very clever. So you're not actually going to the physical locations.
No. And that's what's very different about this approach. The analysis piece, we're also working on some artificial intelligence tools that when those photos and videos come in, that we can put them into those tools and they automatically tell us what equipment goes where.
Amazing.
And then that will be linked into the fulfillment process. And essentially what we're doing then is taking in all of this content and then being able to generate order straight away.
Okay.
And on the business model side, what's different with us as well is that there is no capital expenditure. So we do everything on an OPEX basis, because we know that the companies that we're working with do things on an OPEX basis.
What does that mean? What does OPEX basis mean?
Sure. So if I'm looking to, say, buy all of this hardware and buy all of the cloud software, the cellular connectivity, the support, whatever other services are required, you know, you're going to maybe spend thousands upfront per location. What we do different is we say, well, here's an annual fee. And you go on to contract for 3-5 years, whatever the term may be. And you pay us that annual fee, and we provide everything rolled into that one price. And companies really, really like that because it suits their budgets.
Okay.
If you're trying to take on like lots and lots of properties at once, then you can break that down quite nicely year on year and tie it in with your energy bills themselves.
Like a sample customer. So you have a sample customer in manufacturing. What would be a sample? What does a sample customer look like?
Yeah, so a big customer of ours works in the logistics industry. They're one of the biggest in the world, you know, worth tens of billions of euro. And we have worked on millions of square meters of their property. And
so take one site for me. So take like one of their sites and kind of break down what that involves.
They will send us the videos and photos. We will then see the equipment that we can attach to their meters. They will then install it themselves, and then they see the data coming up straight away. And that data is then shared with the local site manager, the country head, the corporate head office, and other people who are working on the sustainability initiatives as well. We then also partner with ESG companies who then take those data streams in and then add additional metadata such as CO2, weather, all of the other things that are applicable, right, and create this much richer insight. So we're very much boxed off into our area of data capture for energy. That's a big enough area for us right now. And rather than bringing in those other pieces that I mentioned, like the weather, etc., but where we'll be going in the future is into energy management. And then the next stage after that will be energy generation.
Okay. Yeah. So what does this mean for them on a simple basis, right? They call you up, they send you the photos, they install your machine. Mm-hmm. Why are they doing that? What's the output?
Yeah, so they have incredibly large electricity bills, especially in the logistics and supply chain industry, which is why we specialize on high energy consumers. So we aren't, our customer type wouldn't necessarily be, say, a coffee shop or a restaurant, or even residential, because in residential, there are very few efficiencies that really can be made.
Yeah.
And, you know, see a lot of talk about smart meters and things like that. But, you know, you can look at just walk around your house and check what's consuming energy.
Yeah.
And that can be as easy as anything. But the large energy consumers where you've got sites and buildings that are hundreds of thousands of square foot per location, you have a lot of things everywhere. You have a lot of equipment. You have things that are being charged. You have a lot of maybe a lighting infrastructure that is outdated, that consumes quite a lot of energy. And so you don't know what's going on. So you have to start with that main consumption, then start to break it down and understand what is going on in the different areas of the building. And at the end of the day, it's in a way, it's a behavioral analysis. Because it's a bit like you have your Whoop band on right now, right? So it's kind of like where we're going with this is by providing Whoop for energy, which is going, okay, here is all of the different things that are happening in the building, and here are the optimizations that you can make to then reduce that cost, reach your sustainability goals, achieve kind of, you know, longevity.
And how are you tracking all that? Is that sensors? Is that cameras? How are you tracking it?
Sensors. So let me give you an example of, let's go for your own house, right? To bring it to the back to residential for a second. When you look at your own electricity meter in your home, you will see a little blinking light.
Mm.
that little blinking light is actually data. And what that data is the kilowatt consumption of your home. What we do in some locations is we will put a little tiny sensor on top of that blinking light. We will then count those blinks and then convert that into how much energy is being used.
Okay.
So 1,000 blinks might be 1 kilowatt hour. And then we're able to then take wirelessly send that data to our own gateways that we've installed within the buildings or that they've installed, and then send that up to the internet. So the installation process is also quite unique in our scenario, because in lots of buildings, anyone can do the installation. You can just stick the sensor onto the front of the meter and plug in the gateway, just like your Wi-Fi router, and that's it. It's done.
And then what's that capturing? So for them, is that that's telling them how much energy per hour? Is it breaking it down further, or how does it work?
Yeah, in some cases, we break it down by minute. So we can see by minute what is going on in a number of buildings. So straight away, you're getting a really good understanding as to the behavior within the premise. And what we notice in some locations that we work in is straight away, you might notice that there's high consumption at night when there shouldn't be. An example I love, which was one of the first kind of deployments we ever did, and I won't name anyone in this one.
That's how all good stories start.
Yeah.
Continue.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's I have a lot of stories that start that way. Maybe too many. Yeah.
I had someone yesterday, and they're like, so anyway, as the case and with the so-and-so, and I'm like, oh, wasn't going to name them.
Beep.
But they're like, it's in the paper. It's fine. I'm like, I guess we're going to find out.
Yeah, so like in this scenario, it was actually...
Company X.
Yeah, well, that is a company now. We'll go for company Y.
Elon, you're running Company Y.
Yeah, it could have been Company X. But in this scenario, this was one of the first deployments we had ever done in energy. And what we had installed some sensors into this... kind of distributor, but they also had a small manufacturing facility and lots of materials. It was a pretty heavy duty operation that they had, really. And the data was coming through, and we noticed between 2 a.m. and 6 a.m. every night, there was incredibly high consumption. And we were going, we've done something wrong here. You know, and we told our customer, we said, look, this is what we're seeing in the data. We think it's our mistake, but we want to just share it with you anyway. And then their customer came back to them and said, I'll tell you what, I'm just going to go out at 3 a.m. And obviously, you can imagine if we had our, you know, head in our hands going, oh, this is going to be so bad.
And it wasn't a 24-hour day operation.
No, it was just a
normal,
9-5. Okay. 9-5 operation.
Okay, so between what time and what time?
And we noticed the regular anomaly between 2 a.m. and 6 a.m.
Wow, okay. So middle of the night, dead quiet.
Made no sense, but it was a huge amount of energy.
Wow.
And he went out, and then we got a call the next day, and he said, guys, just want to thank you. I went there, and there was a bunch of people all using the equipment and the materials, and I just cleared house straight away, so I've made my saving very, very quickly.
Oh,
we don't even need to look at any more of the energy, because...
You just paid your contract off next 3 years
yeah,
in one night.
That was it done, yeah. And this is why I keep using the word behavior, because at the end of the day, energy consumption it shows behavior. Like if we put that little sensor I talked about on your own home,
yeah,
I could tell when you've put the kettle on,
yeah,
or I can tell when you're having dinner, because there are appliances that have that kind of that peak that for that duration of time that then is kind of quite identifiable even by the human eye. So that doesn't even require artificial intelligence or anything like that.
Yeah.
That's just literally looking at a chart.
This is what I was going to ask you: how much of it is man and how much of it is machine?
Yeah, so at the moment, a fair bit is man.
But is in the behavior aspect of what you're talking about there. Like,
okay.
is this about kind of educating people's behaviors as to how they work?
Yeah, it's a bit of both. It's a bit of both, right? So
a great story, by the way.
Yeah.
That's a crack. I would have given anything to just, that's like a comedy sketch. Your man walks in at like 2 a.m. and everyone just freezes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Like when we were told it, we were just like, oh, okay.
Do you have CCTV? Because I kind of like to see the expressions on the lads' faces when they were there like manufacturing away. I admire the hustle, by the way.
Oh, yeah. No, actually.
Between 2 and 6, God bless the hustle.
Yeah. And actually, now that you mentioned that, we really should have done a deal with them and said, look, can we actually have the footage this for social media? And we'll like, you know, do an ad share on kind of you kind of exposing these people.
This will be our case study for the next 10 years.
Yeah, it's like Undercover Boss, but like a slightly more ninja version.
But isn't that just so interesting? Like that's like the perfect case study going, you know, you're never going to see that. You're never going to understand that. Like bar literally someone goes there.
Yeah.
It's bonkers.
Totally. And that's why when we are presenting the data or giving access to the data that we've captured, we need the people who are there on site to tell us, okay, what is, you know, what do you think this is, or what should this be? Oh, okay, that's a bunch of machines being charged up at that time.
Yeah.
And there are little things you can go and say, okay, well, let's like stop charging those machines at that time and move that to later in the night when you're being charged a different rate.
Yes.
But HVAC, for example, is one of the biggest consumers for sure. HVAC systems that are left on, say, at the weekends when no
one's
there.
What are HVAC systems?
Sorry, so ventilation systems for kind of for air. And so a lot of those are left on as if there are a whole bunch of people within the building. And that is a massive consumer. And
it's amazing how so many machines are still dumb machines.
Yeah.
As in there's literally a switch on, off.
And the thing is, I'll admit, when I started in the IoT industry, I was very much of a, you know, I don't know if you ever see the meme where it's like the guy going, clean all the things. You know, it was like this, I was kind of the connect all the things version of that. and like
connect everything.
Yeah, exactly. But the industry very quickly realized, oh, well, hold on, if we connect everything, we don't know what to do with it. And I do believe that there are a lot of manual machines there that can be just like, you know, slightly optimized, and that's it. You know, you don't need to.
But even turning things off overnight, simple things like that.
Yeah, and we're going to get into an even bigger problem with energy as we now become heavy users of artificial intelligence technologies. Like I know myself, I use ChatGPT, Copilot, all of those things every day for business and personal use. It makes a lot of sense to use them. But that's only going to get bigger and bigger and bigger as time progresses, especially as we're looking at, you know, some people's roles being replaced by it and all of the different predictions that there are. And that's going to require a phenomenal amount of energy to do so.
Well, you're in an interesting industry because energy consumption's only going one way.
Yeah, it's only going up unless we have something catastrophic happens, and then we've got a different problem. I don't think we're quite going the direction of the dinosaurs just yet.
But it's interesting that, like, you know, it's been so many advances, but yet kind of like we still work in a very manual, very physical, very kind of unautomated world.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, AI are going to change everything. It will, but like it'll take a long time. And like, we still work in a world that's very, you know, the interaction between man and machine is still very difficult.
Yeah, and you know, we see companies working on interfaces between man and machine to increase the bandwidth and everything like that. I don't know if I'm a big fan of that stuff. I definitely see how it can change the lives of some people, but in terms of mass adoption, most likely not. But we're certainly going in that direction. If you look at if you look at kind of what we are really obsessed with across, you know, business or even in our own lives, it's efficiency.
Yeah.
You know, I like to break innovation down into two areas. It's innovation out of convenience and innovation out of necessity. And in the world that we live in, it's a lot of it is out of convenience. And we're constantly trying to optimize things more and more and more and more. And at what point do you optimize where... So I get to the point where you optimize and the physical entity doesn't make even sense anymore. And we see that with our digital personas because they can do a lot more than we can manually. They can reach a lot more people. And the limitations of the physical are already very apparent. And it's about how far we want to go down that road.
Yeah, we're really only starting. Like I like the way you talked about being an optimist. Like it really is so early, like, and you hear these doom mongering stories all the time. You're kind of going, yeah, but still live in a pretty manual world.
Yeah, I've thought about this quite a bit, right? So first off, the pessimism, there's no point, you know, there's no point in waking up every day and being pessimistic. But over the pandemic, I guess, while I was kind of being a bit of philosophical, I kept asking myself this one question, and it was, if humanity had a mission statement, what would it be?
Interesting question. What did you come up with?
Well, so first I was trying to think of all the different types of people that there are in the world, and all the different types of backgrounds and things that people are into. People, like, I may not agree with or anything myself, and I was trying to think of one statement that could encompass all of that. And where I landed was that we are explorers of consciousness. And that was that I was able to distill it all down to that one thing. And that's really what we all are. Yeah, we're getting very deep.
Where does that bring us? Sorry, I was writing that down as you just suddenly stopped dead with that statement. You just dropped that and was like, there we go.
Yeah, I can't drop the mic.
That's the end of the pod. So we're wrapping up at 23 minutes 34. New record. That's it. We've solved it all.
Yeah, that's everything done. Yeah.
That's the end of the pod and the series and the pod. That's it. We're done. Good night. Thank you. It's been a good 5 years.
Yeah, but there was definitely a lot of soul searching with that point. It was really interesting to explore. And I kind of proved my own point by just saying that.
You were deep in lockdown at that stage, I would imagine.
Yeah. Like, I'd already gone through the whole delivery menu multiple
times.
You
cut your own hair. You definitely done all the, you've done the online Zoom quizzes.
I even tried to grow a beard and it didn't work out. It doesn't grow on the sides. You know, that's still something that I'm working on. It just grows kind of, it's like Homer Simpson just in the middle. Yeah, like tomorrow I'll just have this kind of thing around my mouth. I had to give up on the whole beard thing. So decided philosophy was the way to go.
Clearly. Explorers of consciousness. If you want to do a book deal, I'll tell you where to reach him. So going back to
reality.
Well, I'm just kind of stuck in exploring my own consciousness here. During COVID, you got involved in a pretty interesting project talking about COVID. You got involved in a pretty interesting thing. What was it?
So this was a tweet that escalated. And I've had a few of those, but I think this one probably gets the biscuit. So at the beginning of the pandemic, we were all kind of in freakout mode, right? And it was the first time I think most of us had been through a pandemic. Don't think many people were around for kind of the Spanish flu. But... I put out a tweet just saying, do we need to start building ventilators? And I got a response from Colin, a friend of mine. And then I paired up with him and David, and we ended up co-founding an organization called OSV, Open Source Ventilator. And the goal was to really create one of the world's first open source ventilators, kind of in the name, pretty descriptive. Mm. We didn't really hide anything there. And that grew from... I guess that tweet to 6,000 people in 2 weeks. And it just went absolutely insane. So here we were, three Irish lads who had never built a ventilator in their lives, had now created one of the world's largest organizations, one of the fastest growing open source hardware movements ever. And we're being reached out by Fortune 500 CEOs and executives all around the world, getting DMs from billionaires going, can I drop you guys a few hundred K, and being offered millions kind of everywhere to really get this initiative going.
And that started from a tweet?
Started from a tweet,
and just went viral?
Yeah.
Wow.
Back when Twitter was fun. It was just truly phenomenal, but it really goes down to the team that were involved, and that's an important point about this. You know, we had a core team of about 40, 50 people just trying to run that community. We partnered with guys who ran a biker network throughout all of Ireland. At one stage, we were delivering, I think we were delivering the most PPE in the country, utilizing this volunteer network.
Right.
No one got paid. That's the important thing to note here. We weren't taking money. The problems were product and community. That's what we focused on. We knew money was there if we really, really needed it. And
what was happening? Like, were people donating these hundreds of thousands? And what was happening there?
Well, people were just donating kind of things like the PPE, and there was no money really exchanging hands at all. And we purposely stayed away from that. We wanted to make this a very much volunteer, community-driven initiative, and not to appear as if it was some financial kind of business that we were trying to create. That was not what we were trying to do. And then we also partnered with some incredible engineers in Canada, and we were sitting on phone calls with, you know, the kind of world governments, World Health Bodies, every day, the kind of one particular company gave us their CTO and three factories and 70 engineers.
It's crazy. And like you were just like, so was your job to harness all this brain power to create a ventilator?
Yeah, and it was all really one big Slack channel with about 20 other initiatives also running in it as well. And people were constantly putting in ideas, and we had this kind of we basically had a GitHub that we had all everything on and that everyone collaborated on, and we did it. It's there today. You can go and download the plans, the electronics, the software, the industrial designs.
And did people start building them?
Yeah, some people started building them, yeah. This was really a massive eye-opener, especially for the governments who were going, hold on, how can you know a bunch of people who've never done this in their lives do something that takes a company years? And that it really opened up a lot of minds in a good way. To what can be done when people get together. And this goes back to what we were discussing, I guess, about my optimism. That's why I feel optimistic about the challenges that we will face in the future, because when people want to collaborate and solve issues, we can do it.
Okay.
Really quick break to thank today's sponsor. If you've been inspired by listening to The Amazing Business Person and either want to start your own business or supercharge an existing one, then the local enterprise office has something for you. Whether you want to improve your online presence, become more sustainable, get into new markets, or just get the idea off the ground, they have the support for you. For more information, check out your local enterprise office on localenterprise.ie and see how they can help your business today. Now, back to the episode.
Obviously, COVID was a very unique time. People kind of just seemed to open up more and seemed to just get involved more. What do you think it was? Like, what did you capture there that maybe... We now live in a very divisive world. And now it seems to like we've yin to the yang. Everything you thought would happen during COVID is happening now. Prices are escalating. Money is tight. People are very insular. People are very fearful. Break down that consciousness for me. What's happening?
Yeah, we could do a whole episode on just that one. But I think it's hard to tell how apparent the polarization really is, right? So we go into the bubble that is the internet.
Yes.
And
good point.
It's a voice. Now, if you go onto the street and ask a bunch of people the same questions that you see on the internet and the responses that you see, are you going to get similar ones? Possibly not. And so I'm not saying that the polarization isn't there. It definitely is, for sure. But one of the things that I really liked actually about the pandemic was a lot of people realigned their lives.
Yeah.
In a very good way. There were a lot of social benefits that came there. People sat down and said, okay, well, do I need to be doing these 80, 90, 100-hour weeks and sacrificing, you know, other personal ambitions or my family or whatever it may be? And I think that a lot of people have come to appreciate the good things that we do have. And yes, while we may have the issues that we've got, you know, economically, politically, and with wars and all of those different things that are going on in the world, I do believe that, you know, if there's enough willpower, we can resolve them.
I think there was just so much unrest in terms of like people never really knew what remote work was. People thought it was like laptop warriors and people having their gap year in Bali just because they were having a breakdown or whatever. It was this very negative stigma, and like entrepreneurs like myself and yourself who work for yourself, you kind of had that, but in a very different way. Whereas now, people have been asked to adopt a whole new mindset. Very quickly, they're asked to adopt the remote work mindset just because they had to. And now we live in this weird limbo land of like, people are never going back. And I agree with you completely. And I think it's brilliant because the genie's out of the bottle when it comes to poor work practice, to comes to asking people to get in their car at 7 a.m. and get home at 8 p.m.
Yeah.
Don't see the kids, you know, living for the weekend. People have kind of gone, well, wait.
Yeah, what I've been laughing at is this term quiet quitting. I find it quite funny.
People love little quippies. The Zoomers is the new one. The new Zoomer generation.
Okay, I assume I'm part of that.
That's bubbling up this week.
Okay.
Zoomers are now like, Zoomers don't work. Zoomers do this. Zoomers do that. I'm like, I think you're just the media love to like label things.
Totally. And so with the quiet quitting term, the analogy I like to give is this, right? I walk into a shop and I buy a banana and I give them the money. Do I turn around and say, why didn't you give me two bananas? you know, when someone, when you hire someone, you have an employment contract, and you then have said, you will work for me for these number of hours for this rate. That's the agreement. And this is where the term quiet quitting just really doesn't make any sense. There was an agreement there in place that has been somewhat abused for a substantial amount of time, especially within certain industries. And now people have reevaluated themselves and aren't willing to take that anymore. And it's considered to be quitting, which really doesn't make much sense. And I think it's just a really good thing that people have kind of stood up for themselves and considered the other aspects of their life, because it's not, you're not there to just work every hour of the day. Me as an entrepreneur, I have that choice, you know, but I never put that on anyone that I work with.
I think that's the thing. And I had this chat with someone yesterday. We were having a chat about hiring and stuff, and he was like, oh, I was terrified that, you know, during COVID, people would just do nothing. And I was like, they're probably doing nothing in the office.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
Like, you don't, an A player doesn't become a D player just because the PlayStation's next door. Maybe I would. But, you know what I mean?
Yeah, FIFA's a bit of a problem for me at the moment. Or anyway.
My thing is Call of Duty Warzone. That's my.
Oh, yeah. I've had a bit of an issue with that too, yeah.
So, the thing is, like, you know, if you are this in the office, you're going to be that at home. Yep. Maybe slightly magnified. And, like, it ebbs and flows, right? But, like, it just comes down to trust and hiring good people. If you can't trust people to work at home, well, then they're not going to work properly in the office either. You just hired bad people. You've just hired the wrong types of people. And I think it's a biased thing. It's like we talked about human psychology earlier. Like, it's just getting your head around this new way of working. And I ask every single entrepreneur that comes in here and every single person I meet, going, what's happening? What way are you working? What's this? What's that? What's the other? And, like, we are in a complete transition shift here.
For sure, yeah.
The world is shifting, and, like, humans, technology changes, humans don't. I think about that all the time, because like, we're so wired.
Yeah.
We're wired to do the certain things the certain way, you know, avoid pain, seek comfort.
Well, you've seen it. Our attention span has, what, halved in the past 15, 20 years?
Yeah.
You know, which is a phenomenally bad number.
Yeah.
And that's because of a lot of the technology shifts that have been introduced that we weren't designed for.
And that's it. And they're the negative things. But overall, when, like, your psychology, it kind of holds true for thousands of years.
Yeah.
So, like, we're now expecting people to shift on a dime and kind of go, oh, now there's a whole new world of work. And people need certainty, because every person I'm talking to is doing it differently. And people are, like, confused and uncomfortable and the quiet quitting thing. Because they're like, I just don't want to do this because I don't know where I'm going with this. Like, a friend of mine works for a large tech company. We definitely won't name them. And he was hired on a remote contract. And he's extremely smart. And he knew his contract. He's very, very clear when he negotiates anything. Remote contract, because he lives quite a bit away. But the team he is managing were there before him. So they all had just normal contracts.
Yep.
Email went out last week. If you live within 60 minutes of the office, you're now mandated to come in.
Yeah.
And there's war.
Oh, for sure.
Because you just, people have fundamentally changed their lives and fundamentally changed how they think about their lives and think about work. So I think companies are now panicking. And I do, tinfoil hat time, I do wonder how much of a lobbying pressure there is from large industry bodies who have billions tied up in the commercial market. Because you look at the city now and it is quiet.
For sure, it's really quiet.
So quiet.
You know, as we were discussing, we're both down in Wicklow, and we, you know, we come to Dublin, I guess.
Yeah.
And it's quite noticeable, right? So you
and Wicklow's buzzing. Absolutely buzzing. I was chatting to the owner of Umi Falafel earlier, and he says footfall is at least 50% down.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah, and you've got broken business models, right? So
yes,
in that scenario, but jumping back to the types of companies that we were discussing earlier that are asking people to work 80 hours a week, they're making it, the employees feel like they're the problem, but the problem is actually the business model of the company.
Precisely. Yeah. This is what no one's talking about.
Yeah. And that's why I tell people, and we're not going to name industries here, I think they know who they are.
Hang your head if you're listening.
Beep. If you say to people, okay, you know, you're on this, okay, give me your effective salary, you know, or your hourly rate, really.
Yeah.
And it's a very different number than what they think it is.
Yeah.
And also doesn't include the other sacrifices that have been made. And it's just so important to get that balance. And I say that as someone who has kind of, you know, gone to crazy lengths in work and stuff before.
But by choice as
yeah,
well.
By
that's
choice.
The difference, right?
Yeah, that's my luxury, right? But that's why I'm very conscious of making sure that I don't do that to others, because I want them to be, you know, happy, and to be able to come into work, be motivated, enjoy what they're doing. Like, the buck really stops, you know, with the executives in a company, it's the behavior of those executives that enable the culture. And if that behavior is as simple as mandating stupid things, then you're going to get, you know, stupid responses. And I would like to see a world where people just can appreciate, you know, the different lives that we all have. I do love all of these things. You'll see it on like LinkedIn, Instagram. Here's my morning routine, and here's all the things I do. And if you don't do this, you're going to fail. And it's like, okay, let's get to the basics of the biology of this. Everyone has different circadian rhythms, you know. So getting up at 5 a.m. won't work for some people. That's just the way that they are. That's why we need to appreciate that everyone has a different blueprint. And work should be designed, I believe, around that blueprint with very clear goals that are required. And that's the opportunity that we have. And that's where I think some certain companies are certainly going in the wrong direction.
Well, you've hit the nail on the head there. Bad business models that just aren't financially viable in the modern world. Like, you made a really excellent point there about circadian rhythms and people have been different. But like, we're using the 9-to-5 model from the industrial era, when people, 400 to 500 people went into a factory to make widgets working on an assembly line.
For sure.
When you pull that back, it doesn't make any sense anymore.
Yeah.
The world, we're not really a manufacturing world anymore. Certain parts of the world are. We're not. A lot of the developed world are not manufacturing anymore. For good or for bad, that's a whole different debate.
For sure.
But you're adopting something, you're bringing kids into work, into school 9-to-5, then we go into the office 9-to-5,
yeah,
and then everyone just is out on the street at the same time, traffic. Like, it just, when you think about it from a logic point of view, like you said there, even just from a work level point of view, I do very well in the morning, you might do very well at night, you might do very well in the afternoon, you might have a kid that needs something in the morning as opposed to the afternoon. But it comes back to like good management and good businesses, setting. Are you able to set goals that are realistic? Do they actually move the needle? Mm-hmm. Are you actually just working to work? Or are you working to build something?
Totally. And going back to what you were saying there about the 9-to-5, it's just, for a lot of people, it just doesn't make sense. You know, unless you're sitting in, you know, meetings constantly with kind of clients or whatever, you don't need to be. You don't need that time synchronization.
No.
It's kind of that goal oriented piece of being able to say that. Yeah, we have a ghost. It's that goal-oriented piece of being able to say, okay, here's all the things that you need to do. Here's when you need to get it done. And you and your team work together to figure out when you need to collaborate. And, you know, if that requires in person, then you figure that out. Whatever exactly you all agree with that works together. Because it's quite hypocritical for companies to champion on about being sustainable and then say all you people need to that come into this building because we need you all to commute, we need you all to spend all that money and energy coming here, and then being disgruntled, and then we need to make sure that our portfolio doesn't lose its value.
Well, there's a huge amount of greenwashing going on as well. John Beckett from Channelside in a few days ago, and he was talking about Nature Trust and stuff, and he was really open my eyes a lot about, like, you know, greenwashing, things like that. There is so much of that going on. Companies,
sure,
like, okay, we need to take that box. What can we do? Like, let's just cycle the workday one day a week.
And that's why working on real measurable things, right? So bringing it back to energy, that's why it's very much black and white there, right? So you can go, okay, this is this type of building. It's a square foot. Here's energy that's being consumed. Is that good or bad? You know, it's very, very measurable. And some of the things that we've discussed there about work, they're not even being measured because people know that if you kind of measure them, or not know, but it's quite likely, if you were to measure them, they would give the result that they don't want to see.
That's a huge point, actually. That's a massive point, because we talked about vested interest there earlier. There is a lot of probably data people don't want to know.
Yeah.
Because it might show up that there's massive bloat in the system, the bloat being them.
Yeah, exactly. And there are, you know, there are companies that it will cost them more to maybe get rid of or change bloat, or to totally redesign their operational systems, especially if they're, you know, public companies and they go for something drastic. It's I can see why there can be nervousness in some companies around change from, let's call it, the norm, which is at 9 to 5 in the office. But those that learn to adapt to the change and continue to do so will be the ones that actually are successful.
Well, I think it's adapt or die. I do think we're entering the period of adapt or die, and it does startle me that so many big companies are now struggling and are now going, let's just go back to the way things were. Because we were fine, we were okay. They'll probably last in the next 10 years because obviously, you know, it's death by a thousand cuts, right?
Yeah.
It's just slow, 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 bang. You know, it's never one thing. It's always like these thousand tiny cuts that leads to the wound that you bleed to death, right?
Totally.
It's not the fall that kills you, it's the bleeding out that kills you, right?
And, but that's what happens as we go through these different ages, right? So not to harp on about AI, but, you know, we are going through the AI age. Like, it's there, it's real, and it's not going anywhere. The amount of money being pumped into it is just truly phenomenal. And we're going to see incredible differences as we progress, not just in our work lives, but in lots of different sectors, in our health, in kind of how we run our everyday lives. And this is because of the new tools that we are working on and developing.
Give me, like, you're a very logical, rational dude. Give me a non-bullshit guide how it's going to change, because we were laughing earlier about, like, there's thousands of AI experts in Ireland.
Yeah.
All of a sudden. Wow, last year, John, you were working on blockchain. Amazing.
Oh, yeah.
How you've suddenly become an AI expert. How does this really come into play? Because I'm struggling to see the wood from the trees here at the minute. Like, in the next kind of couple of years, what do you see happening fundamentally kind of to, like, normal business owners and people like me and you?
Yeah. So I guess I can speak firstly about engineering or software engineering. Yeah. You're going to see massive changes there, right? So we use ChatGPT, Copilot, and all of those different tools every day.
For what?
For getting work done. So instead of going, okay, I would like writing a script to go do something, you will tell it, go write me a script that does that.
Okay.
And you've then cut out, you know, hours of your work possibly, depending on the complexity. So we're working on making things much, much more efficient, and that is there today. Is it perfect? No. Are there things that can be improved? For sure. But what is there today is good enough, especially for the price point. You know, you're paying $20 a
month. It's a bit mad, isn't it?
Yeah, it's insane. And, you know, is that a profitable venture for them right now? You know, maybe not exactly, but a lot of it's about market grab. But you can see it very, very clearly in engineering and even on the operational side of businesses. At the end of the day, when you're trying to build a business, you're trying to create a service or a product that helps people, right? And a lot of that is automation. And I do love the story of, you know, the Stripe guys about whenever they started off, you would send an email, or sorry, you'd sign up or send an email to create your account. And then, you know, within a few hours or 24 hours, they emailed you back saying it was created. For you, that was an autonomous process. What was going on is they were doing all these different things in the background, calling people, and a total bunch of processes going on. But at the end of the day, the customer didn't know. And it created that black box. And you're going to see more of that kind of stuff around kind of services and people being able to offer advice and being able to improve their own operational efficiencies by using all of these different tools rather than having to invest in big, heavy, bulky teams that you don't need.
Mm. Yeah, the perfect example is for the pod. It used to be like trying to create transcripts and stuff, because I'm always thinking about, like, you know, people who mightn't like to consume audio, can't consume audio, even just pulling out extra value from the pod for people, kind of like good points and clips and stuff like that. And I used to use this tool that would, like, give me a transcript, and it used to be wojus. Like, especially the Irish stuff, the Irish slang, they're all over the place. Like, your name would have really went to town with that.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas now, amazing. Like, I won't say 98, but 95% there.
Yeah.
Really good on transcripts, able to give it a full summary. Here's the salient points. Here's your chapters. Here's your titles. Mm-hmm. Here's your tags. Amazing. And for me, and that's why I like to ask other people, because for me, it just solves the blank page problem. When I sit down to do now an episode, I feed in the audio and it gives me 80% of the way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of going, okay, now I can see where I'm going with this episode. I can kind of, like, now I can start to write myself and I can start to build on what it's given me. That's the kind of assistant piece whereby, if you take it back like 5 years, I would have had to, like, gone to Upwork, get someone to transcribe it for me, listen to this, pay per minute to get a transcription. That's only a few years ago.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. It's going to that automation and efficiency of your day-to-day tasks. Just going back to your point around podcasts, what I really thought was interesting, I don't think this is out yet, but they certainly showed it. Spotify have the ability to convert your podcast to essentially any other language.
Oh, interesting.
And the reach for content creators is going to be phenomenal as a result of that, because now you can listen in a language that you're comfortable with. Or that you're fluent or fully proficient.
Mr. Beast did that. And in fairness, his content wouldn't be for me, but he's way ahead of the game in terms of how he does it. He hired voice actors.
Okay, well.
So he'd hire, like, the voice of Spider-Man in Spanish-speaking countries. And he'd get them to not kind of dub.
Yeah.
And it immensely popular. And totally. It added hundreds of millions of downloads. Mm-hmm. And like, it makes sense when you think about it. So, like, interestingly, an Irish company sent me, they were trying to set that up. And they sent me like some German stuff of me, like, and it was cool. And I was like, probably not that many people in Germany dying to hear me talk German. But it shows you what's possible. And if it's automatic like that, I always think breakthroughs are very important. If it's extra leverage for not extra work.
Yes.
That's the thing. So if you're asking people to do more work for a little bit of improvement, people are lazy. If you're asking people to do no work and get extra leverage, it's a no-brainer.
Well, totally. Like, so if I'm coming up to, say, a particular challenge or things that need done within the business, the first thing I'm doing is not going to a job finder or a recruiter going, okay, go find me someone who can do this. I will look at the tools that are available and then look at the cost of that, that automation piece and implement that.
Especially when staffing is becoming so hard.
Yeah.
We talked about there in the good way in terms of employees becoming very empowered, but for employers as well, it's very hard.
Yeah.
You know, because you're now trying to hire A-level players. And it's tough. The job market is extremely tough for employers at the minute.
Well, totally. But what excites me, I guess, about the age that we're in is you can have multi-million euro revenue businesses with just a few people that have global reach.
Yeah.
You know, and we're like that ourselves, you know, we're able to be all around the world and create opportunities that we couldn't have if we didn't have all of these different tools that we're able to intelligently utilize. And so I think the future entrepreneur, certainly in the tech world, is going to be the one who can be the best bootstrapper.
Mm.
And I love Bootstrap.
Oh, that's my favorite.
I do, yeah. I had the luxury myself of being an engineer, being able to do things. But bootstrapping a business isn't just about engineering and the technical task. It's about the operational task, the marketing, the sales, all
it's
the other things.
Yeah, it's a mindset. Sure.
It's about finding a way to utilize all of the different things that you're able to avail of and invest in them in an intelligent way. There's a bit of a tangent on the bootstrap, but I love this story. So a family friend, you know, 25 years ago or something, started selling off bags of peat just from the front of his house. Very simple. Really understood the customer, understood the price
bags
point.
Of peat.
Yeah, bags of
turf,
peat. Yeah, from his house. Not even a commercial premise, from his house.
Yeah.
Now that business turns over hundreds of millions a year. And I like telling entrepreneurs that example because that is saying, okay, build the most simple product that you can. Get the price point right. Get out there. Get speaking to your customers. Even if it's word of mouth, doesn't matter what channels that you're using, find a way to fill the top of that funnel and focus on using that as the lead gen for the future pieces of your business. I think a lot of technology companies and founders want to go off and build everything. And I say this as someone who's learned not from books, but mostly from mistakes. When you have the keys to the car, you feel like you can drive it anywhere. But sometimes it's best to take the shortest path. And that is what I think a lot of tech guys need to, or tech founders need to think of in the future. Go, what is the most simple thing that I can do to actually acquire that customer, to get them to pay for something? And then I've started to create that relationship. And then we can look at the bigger picture.
Mm-hmm. I love Bootstrap founders. It's my favorite story when they come in because it's a mindset, it's a way of thinking. And even if they do take funding down the road, they approach it totally different and they spend that money totally different. And they're far more strategic because they know how hard it is to earn a euro and they know how they treat exactly everyone like their own.
For sure.
Just because it can be complicated doesn't mean it should be.
Yeah.
I love to find those little stories. We had John Larkin on from the Black Stuff Soap. His literal kitchen table.
Yeah.
And now is going to turn over 5 million this year, 4 years after starting.
Well, my first lesson in that area was when I was 13. So I had found a vulnerability in the Telefonica O2 website.
What a lovely way of putting it. A vulnerability.
Yeah, I probably could have chosen a different word there, but yeah, I got a little bit too technical there. An opportunity.
That's the engineer. It can't help it.
Yeah, in their website that allowed me to order SIM cards for free.
Oh, I remember I remember the glory days.
Yeah, it was pretty great. And so this was 21 years ago.
We're showing our age now. I made all my early money in mobile phones.
Yeah.
Unlocking them.
Oh, really?
Them,
yeah.
Flipping them. that was my gig.
We should have teamed up.
That was my gig.
Yeah. So I was getting these SIM cards sent to the house in batches of six. That's as many as I could order at a time, and selling them in the playground. Now, to give you an idea in the numbers, right, I was in a boys' school for the first 3 years, and there were about 750 students, and the girls' school was next door, same number of students, and we were only divided by a painted yellow line. There was no wall. We had to climb. And then there was about 250 staff as well. So I was running around with a backpack with more SIM cards and books, selling these for cash at a tenner a pop.
Nice.
Or 2 for 15.
Ah, good deal.
Yeah, and so, you know, people were pretty happy.
They're costing you zero. That was a good, yeah, well, sound.
Yeah, I was the only guy who knew how to do it, and that's where going back to the helping and value piece came in. I was the only guy at that time who knew how to figure out this process.
But it doesn't have to be the biggest, brand newest idea.
Yeah.
Just take one thing and tweak it.
Oh, totally.
Find a vulnerability.
Yeah.
It's going to be a new favorite word. You'll hear me say that loads in the pod in the next season. Yeah. Vulnerability. But it's, and that's it. Just don't overthink it.
Yeah,
You don't have to start a mobile network.
Totally.
Stop the idea. Just come away from the whiteboard. Back away from the whiteboard. Just find one thing.
Totally. And I grew that. And practically everyone in the school was running around using the SIM cards. Because they were really popular. Because if you topped them up a tenner a month, you got unlimited text messages. And that was the way everyone communicated at that time. Yeah. And people were really just getting into cell phones around then. So saturated the whole market of the 1,500 students and 200-odd staff, and then started selling them at wholesale prices to other schools in the area, and was basically selling more SIM cards than the actual phone shops themselves. This kind of grew quite phenomenally.
Telefonica are like the marketing department in Northern Ireland are smashing it.
Yeah.
They are just the lads.
Oh, there's people getting bonuses everywhere.
Bring them to London. They've got it cracked. Isn't it funny, the butterfly effect of like, whatever we're doing over there, it's working. Double down over there.
Oh, yeah. They're probably being like, had crazy campaigns going on around like England or something, thinking that their initiative was working, but it really wasn't.
It's the billboards. The billboards are working.
Yeah. And so I was telling this story one day at Dogpatch, and then I won't name the person, but they came up to me after and they were like, that was you. Because they worked for Telefonica.
No way.
And they were an engineer.
No way.
And they were put in charge of trying to find out the problem.
That's brilliant.
So we had a good laugh over that. But yeah, that was my first lesson in going, you know, in that kind of value proposition piece, really. I did have another business at 13, which was a gaming website that, you know, wasn't exactly legit. So that's when I learned what the term cease and desist meant. I don't think my parents know about that, but
we
I guess they do now.
We all get one of those. I have one of those in my office, and I keep it there.
Yeah. Oh, really?
It's a source of pride. I'm like, that's how close to the line you need to go. Not over the line, but that's, if you ain't pushing that barrier.
Yeah. I think all the game publishers didn't know that a 13-year-old who had built his own Wi-Fi network on the back end of a dial-up network. Dial-up over Wi-Fi. That was my innovation then in our home back then. And that was costing them all of this money because I was giving away Nokia phone games for free.
Okay.
And you could just download them. And I was getting hundreds of thousands of uniques at that time.
Whoa.
So again,
which is huge back then.
Yeah. It was
huge
pretty
now,
big.
But it's monstrous back then.
Yeah. So like 21 years ago, that was pretty big. I had some ads maybe on it. Kind of packaged that up and left it at that. Lots of lessons. And I guess that's where the part of the hustle came from. kind of just going, yeah, you know, it's just about grafting with a lot of these things.
It is, though, but it's just common logic, graft, and try.
Yeah, for sure.
That's what it comes down to, like, because you can have all the complicated tools in the world, you can have all the great, like you said, all the great books and all the great strategies, when in reality, it's just like common sense. I was chatting to a founder this morning, and he was talking about how he'd hired someone out of, like, they had, like a blue chip background. They had, like, Google and Accenture and all this on their CV. And it was one of the first hires in the startup.
Yeah.
And he was like, just unmitigated disaster. Just a shambles. He goes, I was naive because he was a first-time founder. He goes, I was naive because I just thought, yeah, makes sense. And it does.
Yeah.
Until you kind of go, but they have none of the grit and the graft of, like, having to go from zero to one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just totally different. And it's just... It's a skill, and you, how do you do any skill? You practice.
For sure.
You have a grow.
Yeah, I think you've touched on something there. Yeah, practice is just so important.
It's everything.
And I was quite fortunate, I guess, at a young age to be able to practice some of those things around business. And there are other projects that I worked on as well that taught me a lot. But then I guess my bigger lessons were going, okay, well, when it becomes a tech company or something like that where you can do so much and your reach is so big, how do you discipline yourself to distill it down to, you know, that one thing that's going to do very, very well? Mm. And it is a little bit easier with physical product like SIM cards where you're going, I have this box full of stuff. I need to move it to somewhere over there and I need to get money back.
The logic is the same, though.
Yeah, exactly. but it's very easy to get distracted by all of the flashy changes that go on in the market and, you know, things that customers ask for. You know, you have to hold your gun sometimes and just go, no, you know, or hold your stance, not your gun.
vulnerability, but, gun.
Yeah.
So many Freudian slips.
Yeah, God, yeah. Maybe I've explored my consciousness too much. But
I'd love to know, like, what your watching history on Netflix has been or on Amazon for the last week, because there's clearly some stuff going on there.
Don't save. Actually, you know, I keep going on to people about this, but yeah, Three Body Problem
is good.
So I've read all the books. I love the books. It's a good enough adaptation. I recommend it. But then I guess another business-oriented show that I'm watching is The Gentlemen. I'm about halfway through that.
Obsessed. I
watched quite a few lessons in that one too.
Layer Cake is my all-time favorite movie.
Yeah,
and then The Gentleman came out. I watched The Gentleman, I think, 5 or 6 times.
Yeah,
and then I saw the series come out. And I was like, "Please be good, please be good, please be good," and it lived up to expectation. The first one was like, but Guy Ritchie's so quirky.
Oh yeah,
and you have to give one or two, and you're like, "Now a minute," and now I just watched it back to back to back to back. I'm going to rewatch it now. It's excellent.
Yeah, so I'm halfway through, going to push on with that one. But one for you, if you haven't seen, a lot of people haven't, is Mr. Robot. I really, really like that series because it's kind of like, not to give too much
that's
away.
That's ringing a bell. That's quite old, though, isn't it?
It's like got Rami Malek, Christian Slater. It's kind of like, it's like Fight Club for hackers. But all of the hacking techniques and everything that are used in it are real.
Okay.
So
that does sound familiar. I think I remember watching a bit of that back in the day.
Yeah, I highly recommend it. Season 2 is a bit, just push on through and the rest of it's worth it. It's one of my favorite shows for sure. Yeah.
You're bringing me on, bringing me on to my quick fire round with some TV recommendations. I should probably introduce them. What's the next kind of like, bring me on to the next kind of 6 to 12 months for yourself and the company? What's the plan?
Yeah, so for us, as I mentioned earlier, we're primarily focused on energy monitoring right now and continuing to expand that out and bring on kind of more locations, right? So we're covering tens of millions of square meters of property already, which is good for, you know, a small team. And that's what I like having. I like having a small team that can work efficiently, as I've mentioned earlier. So we were going to move into energy management as well. So we're starting to look at some areas around that, starting to discuss that with some customers and critical infrastructure too. And then even further down the line, then energy generation is where I believe there is going to be a huge opportunity, because what we're seeing is a lot of businesses are still, everything's just still hooked up to the grid.
Right.
You know, and you'd be surprised the number of places have no solar, have no wind, have no battery storage. And as the cost of all of those things is drastically dropping, the implementation and business models around them need to become a bit more intelligent as well. So there are some ideas that we're looking at pushing around that, which we'll hopefully do, you know, in the short to...
Anyone listening, what kind of size businesses are you interested in chatting to, or what kind of size businesses would this make sense for?
Yeah, it's the large-scale energy consumers with big property portfolios. So logistics, supply chain, retail, if it's all over or nationwide or international, those are the biggest ones. And if you look at, you know, another one is data centers too. I'm talking to some people around that. And if we can make all of those areas work much better, that's going to solve a lot of problems for the world for sure. Because they're the ones who are using a huge amount of certainly electricity anyway.
Where can people get in touch with you?
Twitter. Used to be Twitter. Yeah, you can still find me on there somewhere. LinkedIn, Instagram,
company,
all those different
company
things.
Website is what?
WIA.io. So it's just WIA.io.
Quick fire round time.
Yeah, cool.
What book? I love you've done your prep as well. Because sometimes I ask people, they're like, oh, tough question. I'm like, yeah, I'd love an answer though. So quick fire round for you. Yeah. You've got your homework done. What book would you recommend every entrepreneur must read?
Yeah, so I think this one has already been mentioned on your podcast. So Atomic Habits is one I love. So it can be distilled down to a few pages, really. But a couple of other ones that I enjoy are Creative Confidence by Tom and David Kelly.
Oh, I've never heard of that one.
It's a really great one. And what I love about Creative Confidence is it really goes on about how when you're born, you're inherently creative. You know, as your child, you're learning new things and new abilities. But as you get older, you kind of somewhat inhibit yourself from that ability. So you will talk to people or friends who say, oh, I'm not a creative person.
Yeah.
But it's not true. You are, but as a circumstance of, you know, things that may have happened throughout your life, you have decided
negative reinforcement by people, teachers,
for sure.
Things like that, yeah.
You've decided to push that side away.
I see on my daughter, she's only 16 months, but like she just literally picks things up and just figures them out. And I'm like,
yeah,
how? It's not like you're kind of going, now you do this. She just grabs something and figures it out. I'm like, my God, you're a genius. But it's more interesting that like she just figures stuff out because there's no inhibitors. There's no kind of like, oh, I can't do that.
Yeah.
She just goes.
Totally. And it's there. That exactly proves the point. And I know you only asked for one, but I'm going to give a third.
Book nerd, as many books as you can give me. Creative Confidence is going on the Amazon wish list tonight.
Yeah, it's good. I really, really enjoy it. It's by those two guys founded IDEO, great product design company. And Daily Stoic by Ryan Holiday. It's, you know, a nice way to start the day.
You've named two of my favorite books of all time. Daily Stoic, I have on my desk. Atomic Habits, I have read, I think, 3 times.
Yeah.
And I recommend probably every month.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's just brilliant. It just works. It's one of those things, it just works. Just follow that, just works.
Oh, totally. But it's a nice way to, I guess, start the day. You know, it's a good way if you're having your coffee and just have a read at that. You know, it's only one page a day.
Yeah, Daily Stoic is super. Ryan Holiday is just an immense writer.
Yeah.
That's just someone at the peak of his powers who's just like a practitioner and just excellent at what he does.
Yeah, for sure.
What's the biggest thing you've learned about yourself since starting the business?
I think I learned a lot about resilience. Like we've talked today a lot about a lot of business things, and it's for any founder, you will go through your peaks and troughs. And it's not even just founders; it's for everyone really. And I'm a big believer in it's not about the things that happen to you; it's about how you react to them. And that's where the resilience piece comes in for sure. Mm-hmm. And I had to learn a lot of things and kind of approach things in lots of different ways, but that I think that's the one thing that I've really learned and will continue to push through with as I progress.
That's how I think about my relationships with people. You can't control people. You can control your reaction to people.
Yeah, for
I
sure.
I think about that all the time.
Yeah, like if you're stressed, it's like, oh, well, you know, I can't touch that stress. It's not there. It's in your own head.
Why am I getting so annoyed by that?
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
The question I ask. Why is that annoying you so much?
Yeah, exactly. You know,
it's more about you than it is about them usually.
For sure, yeah.
What would you do today if I give you 10 million euro?
Okay, well, first off, I would thank the person who gave me the 10 million
euro. You're very welcome.
Yeah, yeah, thank you. Now I know why you asked for my IBAN before I came in.
Throw me a couple back. Revolut going, fraudulent activity on your account again, Gary.
Again. So I think I think investing in sustainability projects, right? So I like to look at areas that we need. And I think energy, health, food are three of the things that we need. And three of the things that we really need to improve upon. Like for food, I just think there are a lot of changes that are going to happen, especially around supply chain. Why do we import, you know, pineapples from halfway around the world? when we can recreate the conditions to do them here in an indoor environment. Well, the reason why we do that is because it's an energy problem. So this is why earlier I was saying everything goes back to energy.
It's interesting, yeah.
It's we have the capabilities there, but what we don't have is the ability to do it in an efficient way.
Yeah. When I do go to Lidl on a Sunday morning, I'm like, Honduras. And it's still ripe.
Yeah.
And then you bring it home and it either goes off really fast or not at all.
Yeah, or you see that something came from somewhere, it got packaged somewhere else, yeah. and then it came here, and then it got distributed to a store, and then it comes to your own home. I will say, though, on the 10 million, I will spend some of that money on Lego. For sure.
Look.
Oh, wow.
There you go. That's how committed I
hope I that's going to be on the camera. Yeah.
If you're listening, yeah. Go to YouTube and you'll see what I'm holding up my right hand. If you're watching, you can see it's a tattoo of a Lego man. So that's the original patent for the Lego brilliant. Man.
Oh, wow.
1971, I think, figure one, figure two. That's the front view. That's the side view of the Lego man.
I love it. And actually, if you're not aware, or any listeners aren't aware, going back to the point around resilience, the Lego story is one of that.
Yes.
The founding story of Lego is an incredible, narrative. His workshop burned down two times, mm-hmm. and the Lego piece that we all know, the 2x4 piece, was his last invention or his toy. And that worked.
But even their reinvention now, when you look at what they've done in the digital age, immense.
Oh, totally. I think for me, Lego is the greatest toy ever.
I can't wait till Willow's old enough. I'm like, Willow, we are going to build a Lego city in your room, whether you like it or not. We are building the Lego city I want.
Oh, yeah. No, my last piece is built the DeLorean from Back to the Future. I've got the Saturn V rocket, the Batman from the Dark Knight movies. I've got the Batman bike from the more recent Batman movie.
The Lego store in Grafton Street is just...
Oh, yeah. I'm just like, just take my card.
Remember having like a rough day, just wandering there, just like look around. I go to Hodges Figgis for the book nerd, and then I come around to the Lego store and I'm like, it's fine. I'm ready to go back to the real world now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I could just spend all day there. So, yeah, a trip to Legoland is definitely overdue for sure.
Yeah. And I've got a daughter. I've got an excuse. And she loves it. I don't though, Dad. What's something important in your daily routine you wish you started sooner?
Okay, so when we were chatting earlier, I mentioned that I've recently moved down to Greystones.
Welcome.
This last year. Thank you very much, sir. That's really got me into the cold shower and sea swim stuff. It works for me.
Yep.
It does. And doing that with sauna is as well. So I think it's the perfect way to start the day. At the end of the day, getting outside for 20, 30 minutes in the morning for a walk is great, because your body actually absorbs more at that time in the first few hours of the day.
And they become suspicious of you in Greystones if you don't do that as well. If you don't do that whole kind of sea swimming thing, they become inherently suspicious of you.
Yeah, if you haven't been seen going around in a dry robe in a while, then questions get asked.
They know you're a blow-in then. Like, they hate blow-ins at the best of times. They're like, oh, not from around here.
Yeah.
Whereas you kind of have to like just pretend like you're
Yeah, it's like they just give you the package with the code in it and just say, we'll see you down here at 7 a.m. every morning. Down the
Welcome.
Cove.
Here's two avocados and a dry rope. I'm going to give you $1 million, but you can only invest in one person or company. Who is it?
Okay, so you had Chris Kelly on here before, so I definitely have to mention Trackworks for sure, not just because he mentioned me.
I was going to say, you're throwing it back. You're throwing the ball back now.
Well, yeah, I'll give him $750 back, or maybe I'll keep the $1 million for a while and take the interest. But another thing, now this isn't, I guess it is a company. If this was purely, a commercial capitalist venture.
It is.
Okay, then what I would put money into is an American rugby team.
Okay.
So
say more things.
Yeah, so I think it's a sporting market that is very much at the beginning. Mm. And what I find interesting about it is the talent is already there. You've got all the people who haven't gone to maybe pro level in NFL or American football. And there is a huge opportunity, I think, there.
That's so if I could buy a franchise tomorrow. But now it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like that answer. Yeah. See, there's a new answer. I haven't got that before. What do you believe that other people will strongly disagree with or find strange?
Yeah, so probably that chicken tenders daily is part of a stable diet. and so anyone close to me will know that that I'm, yeah, that is something maybe I consume a bit too much. I even had some on the way here. And
is there any particular brand or type? Do we have to like shout out like Eddie Rockets, or who are we talking about here?
Oh, so, yeah, some of the good places I like would be Token, the arcade place. They do some good ones called Buffalo Love. That's good. Mad Egg.
Yes.
They do some good ones as well.
Friend of the pod, great lad.
Yeah, I really, really like them there. And Chaimak for some Korean fried chicken.
It's meant to be very good.
Yeah, yeah, go there for sure. So they'd be three of my favorite kind of chicken tender places. So that's the one thing that's missing from Greystones for sure.
There you go. There's your next business.
Yeah, chicken tender stuff. That's yeah, you heard it here first.
If you start a new company in the morning, what would it be?
Going back to our analogy around the pineapple from the other side of the world, right? I think there are opportunities with urban farming. A lot of things haven't been figured out around that area, but I think we don't utilize the underground space enough for things like that. So, you know, we should dig deeper.
Literally.
Yeah, literally dig deeper. and utilize that space for creating a lot of the crops and things that we need. And do so on rooftops as well, obviously.
That's the bit I always find weird, because when I was looking, so we lived on a barge prior to buying our house,
yeah,
and I was looking at everything. I was looking at like rooftop, because there's rooftop living in a lot of cities, and I was like, that's kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Like a lot of factories and are using it for like bees and stuff like that, but I'm like, it's already there. And you talked about solar and stuff earlier. Like, there's a lot of things you kind of go, we always talk about building more and doing more and these crazy inventions where you're kind of going, all the stuff's there. A lot of these buildings are flat as well. You're kind of going, there's a lot of dead space.
Yeah, we don't need to do more. We need to do better. You know,
just creativity, I think.
Yeah,
just
exactly. Like,
just allow creativity as well, because we restrict a lot of things with rules and stuff, going, you know, you can't do this, can't do that, oh, the skyline, blah, blah, blah. And Dublin's a very odd city for that kind of stuff. Mm. What do you spend money on in your personal life that makes you happy?
Yeah, well, we're going back to the Lego and chicken tenders, aren't we? you know, so that's definitely two of the things. But I think experiences are just really important to me. So I like being able to go to events. I actually went to two great gigs last week. Went to see Slash and John Mayer. Slash was at the beginning of his tour, and John Mayer was at the end. And I just think for me, experiences over material goods for sure. But Lego itself is kind of an experience. No, but it is an experience.
You do, you buy and then you build it.
Yeah, like, you know, you don't play with Lego as such. You know, you build it. And for me, it is quite ceremonious. And it's definitely part of my relaxation time. And so it is an investment for sure.
Comes back to that focus thing as well. There's very few things you do in life now where you're not on your phone. Yep. Even you're watching a match or whatever now, you're kind of like, oh, second screening, going, what's happening on Twitter and what in regards to the match. What's your final piece of advice for every entrepreneur listening?
Yeah, I think you want to focus on real problems for real people. So when we look at kind of what our businesses are, the things we're trying to achieve, your job is really to find the best way to help people, and you get compensated for doing so. At the end of the day, business is a very simple model itself, and I think we make it a little bit more complicated than we should. And part of the reason for that is that people just get caught chasing trends. And it can be very attractive to do so, especially, you know, for certain types of investment or anything like that. But if you focus on building meaningful products and services for the people around you, that will be most likely very successful, but also very fulfilling.
What a way to wrap it up. Big finish. Yeah. Big start, big finish. What a pro. That was absolutely fantastic.
Thank you very much, sir.
Coming in.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was good fun.
Thanks for watching. Hope you enjoyed that one. If you did, do me two quick favors. Hit like on the video and leave a quick comment. It really helps the channel to grow, especially when it's a small channel like this. If you enjoyed that kind of content, click here to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And click here to watch a brand new video right now. I'll see you back here next time.